This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, it's only going to get chaotic until a couple of teams lose. That's the way the College Football Playoff Committee rankings went yesterday. Zero surprise yesterday. And then you had to wait for it, of course, because of the basketball game that went into double overtime. But you didn't even have to watch the ceremony yesterday. You knew what was going to happen. There are four undefeated teams. There are four playoff spots. Everything else will work itself out. If you're really concerned about where LSU is compared to, let's say, USC or even where Alabama is at 8-2, yeah, it's fine. But the reality of it is the top four is what people are concerned about, and the top four wasn't going to change at all because everybody won. Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, and TCU. Those are the players right now in the top four of the playoff committee rankings. They were yesterday. They were the day before that. They were the day before that when they started playing on Saturday. That being said, I still look at this and say, okay, the real question is, and I wish there was a way to sort of determine this, but there isn't until one of these teams lose to each other. If you are Tennessee, where do you stand with the committee compared to a one-loss Ohio State or a one-loss Michigan when that game is played? That is where I would want to know where I am in the eyes of the committee. And there's no way to get that feel right now because, again, four undefeated teams, four playoff spots. But we're not going to have four undefeated teams when this thing is said and done. One of those two teams, the Buckeyes or the Wolverines, is going to lose. So again, there you are, Tennessee, sitting pretty at 9-1, wondering exactly where you would fit into the equation. Does your five ranked teams on your schedule matter to the committee rather than a team like Ohio State that has been near the top all season long? Let's say Michigan pulls off the win against Ohio State. They've loved Ohio State since day one. They've got a Heisman candidate in C.J. Stroud. They've loved him since day one. Is Ohio State's loss to Michigan, where is it ranked to Tennessee's loss to Georgia and all the games in between? If you're a Volunteers fan, that's what you're trying to get out of the committee, and you're not going to get it out of the committee until the very, very end. We'll talk more about that. But we'll also get into the NFL because Jeff Saturday, by winning on Sunday, may have disproven something about the way the NFL coaching works. We'll talk about that coming up next. It's Wake Up Call. Glad you could be with us on a Wednesday.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, and good Wednesday to you. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. Good music for just a quick little note of last night's NBA. The Brooklyn Nets gave up 153 points to the Sacramento Kings last night.
Wow.
That wasn't like a double overtime game either. That wasn't like, oh my God, they just keep on playing in Sacramento. No, that was a regulation 48-minute basketball game. The Sacramento Kings put up nearly 160 points. They shot 59% of the floor. They hit 23-pointers. They had a number of guys in double figures, but they scored 42 points in the third quarter and then 38 in the fourth.
Who's on Sacramento?
I know. That's a great question. That's a great – DeAndre Fox.
Is Vlade Divac still playing?
Yeah. Kevin Herter. Vlade Divac still playing. Chris Webber still on the team. Harrison Barnes.
Right.
I think that's basically who Sacramento has. Brooklyn, God, if you're going to go down, you might as well go down that way.
I mean, why not, right?
Like, it's funny because everyone's like, you know, Swiss cheese defense is being too generous to the Brooklyn Nets. They just don't play defense. And Brooklyn's like, no, we don't play defense at all. No, it's like, come watch us play. You'll see tons and tons and tons of scoring. 153 points in regulation. Are you kidding me? Good Lord. Like, somebody make a stop. Oh, I'm sure Sacramento was like, man, the rim looked like a big old bucket. Everything we shot just went in. Goodness gracious.
Kevin, how badly do you think Kevin Durant wants out?
Oh, God, if you're losing games like that, where it's just, God, they just, you got to keep up with a team that's scoring 153 points? What are you, crazy?
I mean, I know he's a Hall of Famer, but
yeah,
it's like the the strangest career I've ever seen anybody
worst
have.
Worst decision.
Yeah.
But, you know, was it a bad decision at the time? If you bring Kyrie, you're bringing Kyrie in. It's like, nah, but it's like, I don't know. It's like buying a cruise and then you get on the cruise and there's no food and the ship runs aground and you go, it was a good idea at the time to go on this cruise. Yeah, but then we got on it and there was like no drinks. You know, it's like, wait a minute. I didn't know this was going to be like this.
So much fun.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. He's like, it'll be New York. Kyrie will be there. It's awesome. We got there's a lot of pluses to this. And it's just been a mess. 153 points. You got to be kidding me. What a joke. They must be tired on their road trip. I don't know. Make up an excuse. So after we got week 10 in the NFL, Bob Kravitz at The Athletic wrote a really good article about Jeff Saturday. And he was saying, look, did you guys expect a 5-car pileup? Is that why you tuned in to see Jeff Saturday fail miserably?
Yeah.
Right? And I was like, yeah, pretty much. That's exactly why I was interested
in
that
game. I'll be honest with you. It was either seeing the Colts crash and burn or the Raiders crash and burn.
Yeah,
and I didn't get what I wanted.
Exactly. So I was like, no, that's what I thought. I thought I would be fun to watch a guy who was just talking on television like 5 days ago to be a head coach in the National Football League. Sure, I'm all in. I'm diving. But that didn't happen, right? All of a sudden, the Colts won. Not only they won, but remember one of the big deals about Jeff Saturday getting the job was that Parks Frazier, our newest name for the sitcom that we were just talking about that NBC should be picking up. Parks Frazier was playing calls on the offense. And he's a 30-year-old guy. He was Frank Reich's assistant. Matt Ryan got the start at quarterback again. And they apparently were on the same page. Like he said it came naturally to him calling offensive plays. And Matt Ryan said, my God, that guy called a great game. He called a great game. So this is finding like a guy that, you know, stepped up in the moment and was like, whoa, hello, look at this. Here's a guy that no one knew who he was. He was like an assistant. Now he's the offensive coordinator calling plays. And he did a great job. He did a really, really great job. That being said, Jeff Saturday is now, I don't know how many hours he worked. All right. I'm assuming he put in some good amount of time in preparation for the Raiders, but the reality of it is he just got there 10 seconds ago and then they won a game against Las Vegas on the road. And he's a very rah, rah guy, but there was probably some meat and potatoes to the preparation for the game, but it can't be anywhere near what, let's say, Bill Belichick has been promoting for years and years, which is no days off, right? Get into the office at 3 a.m, leave at 2 a.m, go to bed for a quick 1-hour nap before you're back at the place, or sleep on a cot, or never sleep at all. Never see your family. Don't see your kids. Never do a thing, because your body, mind, and soul belongs to the preparation of an NFL game on Sunday. Has Jeff Saturday, and again, I'm not saying he didn't work. I'm not saying he was playing golf and hanging out and going out to dinner and whatever. But is the Jeff Saturday hiring one game? Are we really at a point that people want to make it to be that NFL coaching may not be as difficult as it appears to be, or at least the way coaches want you to make it, want to appear to make it? I don't know if we're ready to do that yet, because again, I think the thing about the Colts is, while it is a great story, let's talk about this 2 to 3, 4 more weeks, 5 more weeks down the road. Let's get a couple of games in our belt to see exactly where this trend is heading. But I'll tell you right now, Jeff Saturday did buck a lot of people's initial thought that this couldn't work, because it did work. Whether or not he is successful in the 8 games that he's got on his resume. Now he's going to have 7 more. No matter where that goes, he did win this game. They did win this game, and they did win it right out of the gate, right? They fired Frank Reich on Monday. They hired Jeff Saturday. He barely had enough time to get acclimated to his team because he wasn't around the team on a daily basis. Again, when you fire a coach mid-season and you promote somebody, that's why, let's say if you are, let's say if you're Sean Payton, right? And Sean Payton right now can be a free agent. He can be a coach. And let's say whoever fires their head coach and they want Sean Payton. They wouldn't bring Sean Payton in week 10, right? To go, hey, you know what? Why not we play start now, right? Since we want you, why don't we start now? No, you give the team and the players on the team some continuity until the end of the season. You give them a familiar voice. You throw a familiar voice at them. Someone that's in the meeting, somebody that knows them, and just get through the season. And then you go hire whoever you want to hire, right? If it's Sean Payton or anybody else, then you get that person. But that's not what Jim Irsay did. Jim Irsay said, oh, he's a consultant. But he's not a consultant like he's walking around all the players shaking their hands and going, hey, let's talk a little bit. What do you like? What do you not like about working here? Like, it's not that kind of consultant, right? There's more like, you know, coming in, talk to upper level people, upper level coaches, and then leave, right? He's not going down to the backup kicker, right? And going, hey, all right, let's chat about your career. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? That being said, he was able to get in there, warm himself up to the players. The players warmed themselves up to him, and they were ready to play against the Las Vegas Raiders. Now, again, I don't know about the workday culture of the Indianapolis Colts. Maybe he was putting in 15-hour days. But I do know this. It was a short, really short learning period, and they got it all together. So I think this is something that the media wants very badly to rip apart, this whole notion that coaches' family life should be destroyed in preparation for an NFL game. That if you want to be a coach in the NFL, here's everything in life you have to give up. Famously, do you remember Steve Spurrier when he was the head coach in Washington? And remember, he hated it because his life was severely altered. He had been, you know, a head coach at Florida, and at Florida he was getting great recruits, and his guys were traveling around the country and picking off good players, and he played golf during the afternoon, and a lot of prep went into the game week, but in the end it wasn't like a 15-hour day. And then he got to the NFL, and he was trying to do that, and they were like, no, it's kind of a 15-hour day, 16-hour day. He's like, wait a minute, what? I'm not doing this. And Jeff Saturday was able to pull together and string together enough something, and Parks Frazier was enough to do something to beat the Raiders. We'll see how this, again, the next seven games go for them. But I'm telling you, they're ready to pounce on this idea that you have to bring an air mattress to work if you want to be an NFL coach. Like, the horror stories of that job are insane. I mean, they're insane. Like, I mean, I imagine getting to work at 4 o'clock in the morning, knowing you're not getting out till 10, 11, 12 at night. What kind of life is that? For what? Like, how much breakdown do you have to do? Apparently a lot, but it's also in the end, it could be an urban legend, right? Where coaches are like, you know, it's massive overkill. It's not swatting a mosquito with a fly swatter. It's shooting it with a bazooka. We're here too much because people don't think we should be doing anything else. So we're in our offices 16 hours a week. It's something I think that they're ready to jump on if Jeff Saturday is successful. And I'm telling you, there's another thing to this. Remember the interim coach label? If Jeff Saturday is successful, I wonder how many times owner might go, you know what? I might as well pluck the guy I want to hire if he's available right now. Let him jump on this ship. But it takes a lot more. You got to bring in your own people. Saturday was like promoting guys. Gus Bradley's still there. John Fox is still there. It's not like the clean house that you do when you hire a new head coach. But it's a fascinating trend. Bob Kravitz has a really good article on it, The Athletic, just talking about how we all were wondering, all watching it to fail. And in the end, not only did it not fail, it actually was successful to a point now where even a guy like Parks Frazier is getting praise for the way he called that game. All right. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that is Ron with two N's. We'll get to more NFL coming up, but I did want to get back to the college situation last night. No real surprise, but we are heading to the end of the season and what we are looking forward to seeing when we come back. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. ¶¶
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
By the way, congratulations to Tom Izzo and Michigan State. I know that sounds weird, but they were unranked in college hoops coming into this season. But they played a really good game Friday night on the USS Abraham Lincoln in the Air Force or Armed Forces game on Veterans Day, where they played it on the aircraft carrier. And that was against number 2 Gonzaga. And then in double overtime, they beat 4th-ranked Kentucky last night in Indianapolis. So good. I think Tom Izzo is great. I like Tom Izzo a lot. And I'm glad his team is playing well in these two games. I know a lot of people don't pay attention to college basketball this early in the season with so much football. But last night was a really good game. It was really good to see the way Michigan State played against Kentucky. When Oscar Schwiebig was out of the game, they took advantage of it and got a double overtime victory. So congratulations to him. But yesterday's basketball game meant that the college football playoff rankings, we couldn't wait to kind of see it. And it was no surprise. If you watch it, I didn't watch it, so I wasn't paying attention because I knew what the top four were. Everybody knew what the top four were. Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, and TCU. I knew Tennessee would be fifth, and I kind of went, okay, well, I figure LSU, USC, you work this out. And I'm not really – at this point, I don't care where Alabama is, and I don't care where Clemson is, and I don't care where Utah is, and I don't care where anybody else is. So here's the question. Brought it up at the top of the hour. What are we going to do about a one-loss Ohio State or one-loss Michigan? Because that's coming. So what are we going to do with that? And what is the committee going to do with that? Now, Tennessee, for everything that they have done well this year, one thing that they've got going for them is they've played an extremely tough schedule. But they've played an extremely tough schedule without any real pursuit on their own, what I mean is, right? So they played a ranked Pitt team. That's a team they scheduled on their own, and Pitt was ranked at the time. They're not ranked now, but they were ranked at the time. But then Florida, LSU, Alabama, Kentucky, Georgia, those are 5 ranked teams that they played in the SEC. Now, Florida's not ranked anymore. Kentucky was ranked at the time. Georgia, Alabama are still ranked. LSU is still ranked. They have wins against LSU, and they have a win against Alabama. The SEC is a great conference, and those are good wins against ranked teams. Now, Ohio State doesn't have nearly that, but again, Ohio State, is it at their fault or Michigan's fault if the conference isn't living up to the same level as the SEC? Is there a punishment there because they don't have the same level of ranked teams as the SEC does? Because here's the problem. I'm not here to just sort of pick apart probable chaos here, but I'm here to do some chaos here, okay? If you're Tennessee, be really nervous. Just because you are the 5th team, it doesn't mean you get to move up if Ohio State or Michigan come down. Ohio State or Michigan could stay in the top 4. Also, look at who's behind you. There's a USC team at 9-1. They're 7th. USC wins out and wins the Pac-12. I'm telling you guys, the committee likes conference championships, especially if you're a conference champion with one loss. They really love you. Here's the other thing. They've got a ranked UCLA team. They've got a ranked Notre Dame team. That'll close out their schedule, and then they will play a ranked Oregon team in the Pac-12 title. How in God's name are they keeping a one-loss Pac-12 champion USC out with 3 ranked wins to close out their season? I don't think they're going to do it. I don't think they're going to do it. Here's the other scenario. Pete Futek pointed this out, so I want to give him credit for this. This is actually really brilliant. What if LSU beats Georgia for the SEC championship? Hear me out. If you're LSU, you've now had 2 losses, right? Who are those 2 losses to? Florida State, who are ranked now, and Tennessee. But if LSU wins the SEC championship, beating undefeated Georgia, can Tennessee really be secure in the knowledge that the committee is going to take 2 SEC teams and not the conference champion? Will they take three SEC teams and the conference champion? Very unlikely. Can you imagine if the committee did that, by the way? How much screaming? I'm gonna make a prediction. Here's a bold prediction, Ron. You ready? If the committee came down on the final tally and went, yep, here's your playoff, LSU, Georgia, Tennessee, and Ohio State, there will be a 16-team playoff the very next year. That's it. The very next six, 10 seconds from that decision, there'll be a whole, here it is, and this is where all the teams go, and this is how we're putting it together. There'll be a playoff unveiled second that happens.
In fact, it probably will be in the same breath.
Right,
the same announcement, like, you know, here's your college football playoff, and in 2023 season, yeah. Or for the 2023 season.
Because there will be no way Conway will put up with that. Not a chance. They are going to burn that to the ground if that happened. So what I'm saying is basically if you're Tennessee and you're riding on this idea that if you win out and you got to play South Carolina and Vanderbilt, so you'll win out pretty easily, and you go 11-1, but you're not playing in Atlanta, don't be as secure right now today in the thought process that, oh, we'll just chill out, wait for Ohio State and Michigan to lose, and then we'll just jump into this swimming pool. You can't, because USC is coming with a bullet. If USC wins out, they're coming with a bullet. They're coming with one loss, and they're coming with a conference championship. And if LSU still could get in this thing. Look, could I see the committee put an LSU team with two losses ahead of a Tennessee team with one loss, a team that beat them pretty handedly? Yeah, I can, because they like conference champions. They do. So this is going to get really tight for the Volunteers. Now, again, all of this is speculation on my part because we honestly don't know what they feel about Tennessee. They don't really come out and say, oh, by the way, no, guys, here's how we are seeing it in the future. They kind of like to throw it out there. They like to defend their choices, but they don't really like to tell you, hey, but this is what we think down the line. I don't think they've ever said to a school, hey, just take care of your business. Don't worry. We got you. Right? They always go, well, we'll see. We'll see. Like, went out, we'll see. We'll see how this plays out. But there's a couple, again, there's just a couple of things that you want to throw out there. And again, this is you know, sort of looking at TCU and TCU winning out and holding us. That might not happen. TCU, that might not happen. But to me, I think if you're Tennessee and you're not going to be playing that 13th game, be really careful, because there are teams that are going to be, and that may just be enough. It was for Ohio State the first year of this thing, when Ohio State won and they beat Wisconsin, I believe, at the time, and they knocked out both Baylor and TCU, who had been going back and forth all year as to who was going to share in the big pie at the end of this playoff thing. Both of them got kicked out. They've been consistent on that, where they've said, you know, we really like conference champions. But the reality of it is you've got to have some meat on that. And LSU with the two losses, may not. But again, it's not that, to me, the question isn't if LSU wins the SEC championship, does LSU get in? I don't know if they get in. Two losses is a lot. But I do know this. If I'm Tennessee, that makes me nervous. Because if I'm Tennessee and LSU does win the conference championship game, I know Georgia's going in. Now the question is going to come, will the committee put two SEC teams, and am I going to be it having that Saturday off? That's the question. And I don't know if I'm comfortable in that. I don't think I would be sitting pretty if that was the scenario over my head. But again, watch out with Lincoln Riley and USC. If they win out, that's three ranked wins. They're going. I'm telling you.
Yeah, but doesn't this thing always seem to work out for the NCAA? Like, we draft all these scenarios, but then at the end of the day, it's like, oh, that's just how we planned it.
Yeah, it most of the years. But again, I think TCU Baylor in year one didn't really work out the way we thought, because we had kind of believed that those two teams, you know, there was an argument that both of them could make it, and neither one of them did. It does work itself out. Like, it's a big ask for USC to win three straight games against ranked opponents, especially at Oregon. It's a big ask for LSU to beat Georgia in the SEC championship game. It's a big ask for TCU to go undefeated and win the Big 12. Yeah, you're right. But
it could happen.
And if I'm Tennessee, I'm just saying, Tennessee, don't be comfortable at five.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue on Sports Map Radio on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. By the way, I'm looking at my television screen, and they've got a stand-up outside of Charlottesville for the talking about the death of those three football players that were shot on a bus on Sunday night. They're scheduled a home game this weekend against Coastal Carolina. The school had said yesterday that they're still weighing whether or not they should play the game.
I've also heard they might just end the season.
Yeah, I don't know how you play the game. I understand there's some therapeutic nature that can come from that. I do understand. I've heard that many times from athletes, but I don't know how that community can play football on Saturday. This is a devastating story. I mean, it's a really, really sad story. So I don't know how, but they're still weighing it out. We'll see. But I never like putting my own sort of thought on what I would do in that situation. I think that is something that school and the players and the coaches need to figure out if that's something they still want to continue with. But I got to think that part of the game that is going to be played is sort of the mental preparation that it's going to take to play the game. And I think it seems a reach to think that team this week has been focused on playing football, practicing football, learning tendencies of Coastal Carolina, all of those things that you would say in a game. This is a game. Coastal Carolina is a pretty good team. They play out of the Sun Belt. It's but it's a scheduled game in between your ACC schedule and your rivalry game at the end of the season against Virginia Tech. It's one of those situations. It's not an ACC game. It's not. But to be honest with you, even if it was an ACC, even if it was a big, huge game, I think there's still a thought process in the school. Like, how are we going to do this? So, it's just this really, really sad situation that's going on in Charlottesville, Virginia at the moment. Yesterday, the Manager of the Year awards were given out by Major League Baseball. And boy, oh boy, am I seeing it on social media? How people were kind of like, Buck Showalter, huh? The guy that blew a 10.5 game lead?
Yep.
And this is something coming from a lot of Braves fans that think Brian Schnitker should have gotten this Manager of the Year award. But I'm going to remind people here. Coach of the Year, Manager of the Year, whatever it is, whether it's NFL, whether it's baseball – it never goes to the World Series champion or the Super Bowl champion. It never goes to those guys. It wasn't, Brian Snicker got a lot of votes, don't get me wrong, but the idea behind it is trying to find some unique characteristic to the success of the team to which you're awarding coach and manager of the year. That's why Bill Belichick never won that thing, right? It's like, what was unique about it? Was it an improvement? Was it like Buck Showalter took a team that had not been in the postseason since 2016 and got them to the playoffs, albeit a loss to San Diego in the wild card round, but got them 101 wins. Now, I'm sorry, but which level of more, which is more impressive? A guy that's coming off a World Series championship with mostly the same team, except, Freddie Freeman, but you could argue made an upgrade, or Showalter walking into a team and getting them to 101 wins in a postseason berth that they hadn't had in 6 years. That's kind of the mentality. Now, you could argue Brian Snicker all you want. That's fine. I mean, I understand the guy did win the division. He came back from 10.5 games down. But at the same time, I understand the thought process of giving it to a guy like Buck Showalter. Like, you know who didn't win the American League Manager of the Year award? Dusty Baker.
Yep.
Like, he didn't win it. You know who else didn't win it? Aaron Boone. They didn't win. Those guys, I mean, the Astros had over 100 wins. The Yankees had 99. You know who did win it? Terry Francona, right? There's circumstances to each situation. The Guardians had lost some key players, but found some other guys that worked out. So that's the thought process. It's not just to the best team and the guy that's riding behind the best team. It's like when we were talking to Eton about Doug Peterson, why he thinks Doug Peterson would have been coach of the year. He could have easily went, yeah, why not Sean McVay? Huh? How about that? Right? But no. Why? Because if Doug Peterson wins 8 games in Jacksonville, he's going to be up for it because he's turned around a team in his first year. That's kind of the thought process behind it. Your MVP award is not like that. Your MVP award is to the best player. It's not the best story. It's not the most, you know, it's not the uniqueness of it. It's not that. That comes, you can give out some other sort of fabrication of an award. But for whatever reason, coach of the year, manager of the year tend to go to guys that overcame something or did something right. special or something like that. That's where we're at.
But I'm not too happy about the Buck Showalter selection.
Why? Because Dave Roberts should have got
it? No. Yeah. Honestly, I thought it should have been Rob Thompson.
Yeah, because he jumped right into a Phillies mess and got them to the, you know, near the...
Led them to the World Series.
Yeah, Mike, was that before the playoffs?
And they always vote before the playoffs, but he got them to the playoffs.
He got them to the playoffs.
And that alone should have been, you know, I think that would have swayed my vote. Because, I mean, it is. Buck Showalter, I mean, you know, the Mets were on fire, and then they weren't.
How much is this, though? Yeah, I know. How much of this is likability? Buck Showalter seems to be liked by writers.
And then, you know, I mean, is it also, you know... Do we throw in the media bias, East Coast media bias?
Depending on how the 30 votes that are given, because there's only 30 people that vote. Yeah. It depends on where they are and what they represent.
I think 28 of them are in New York. Just kidding.
Yeah, if that's the case, then that's the problem, right?
Yeah. So, but that's why, I mean, for me, I thought Rob Thompson, no one would have been able to argue that. Because, he came in, late April?
Yeah.
And turn this franchise and turn the team around.
Oh, I was just looking at the voting. Showalter got 77, and Thompson got 36. So that's not. It's kind of a. That's a lot, but he's on the. But he got less votes than Oliver Marmol of the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Right. Roberts came in second in the voting, and Snicker came in third. That's very much the way you would have you expect it. Successful teams with successful managers, we kind of go, what have you done for me lately? But Showalter, 101 wins, playoff berth since 2016, probably likely going to win it. But you're right. Thompson probably should have been up there given his circumstance.
Yeah, at least higher than fifth.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, Dave Roberts. I mean, you could have dropped him all the way down to, not even on the ballot for all I care. I mean, it's. You know, if he's not winning games with that roster, then he's doing something wrong.
Right, exactly. And I think that's the thought process behind it. Because Dusty Baker was fourth in the voting. He wasn't even close. He was fourth, right?
All you need to do is just pencil in a lineup.
Yeah.
And you're good to go.
You know who came in second in the American League? Brandon Hyde of the Orioles. They didn't even make the playoffs, but they had a great year.
They did.
They're one of the watch out for them in 2023 teams that people are really buzzing about because of what they did this season, right? But Dusty Baker and Aaron Boone, they barely got any votes. I mean, Dusty Baker got 31. Terry Francona won this thing with 112. Aaron Boone got 4. He got 4 points, if you will. So, but the votes get points. So he got 4 points. I mean, he got 2 votes and 4 points.
Because again. Aaron Boone, if you're not winning with that roster, in fact, I mean, there's an argument to fire you
right
now because you didn't make the World Series.
The Orioles had a winning season for the first time in 7 years. They won 83 games, right? That's where the manager of the year, where it comes from. That's where, those are the stories you're looking for. It's not, I know people where I live love the Braves, and I know they're LeBryan Snicker, but it's not going to be the World Series defending champion winning the division. It's just not going to be, that's not the way it is.
What they're almost looking for in coach of the year, manager of the year is almost the comeback story.
Right, very much so, very much so.
You know, it's like comeback player of the year. Comeback player of the year is not going to be last year's MVP. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers can go on a tear right now. He was the MVP last year. He can go on a tear and win the rest of the games. He's not getting comeback player of the year.
Yeah, and Terry Francona overcame, again, a team that was depleted of some of its star power, was a team that wasn't expected to make the playoffs but did. He was dealing with health issues. Like, there's a lot of factors that go into this, and the Guardians make the playoffs and gave the Yankees a fits in the playoffs. So that's where that is. I understand. Look, I know social media is a place to go gripe and complain, even if it's not rational. But to me, to see prominent media people that know better to be complaining that Showalter got it over Snitker and not realizing where this, like, where, like, if you want to, I'm with you. I'm actually more with you on this. If you want to say Buck Showalter didn't deserve it, don't sell me Snicker. Sell me Thompson. Yeah. Sell me him.
Yeah, Snicker.
Don't
sell me Snicker.
Don't sell me him or Dave Roberts. Those guys were loaded. Those teams were loaded with talent.
Yep.
And should have made the playoffs. Same thing in the American League with Aaron Boone and Dusty Baker. Loaded teams. So
that's why they're winning 100+ games.
That's right. Exactly.
Forget them. And that's right. Why
it's like Belichick in the NFL. It's like we could have given it to him for 20 years, but we didn't. It's not the award.
But that's why, I mean, you know, I wasn't, I mean, Buck Showalter, sure. I mean, if you look at the first half of the season, I guess maybe because, you know, the Mets didn't really Mets themselves.
Right. Oh, is he getting credit for not doing the crazy, stupid Mets stuff that we've been highlighting for the last 4 years?
Oh, my goodness. He didn't, they didn't bat out of order.
Yeah,
he's the manager of the year.
Bat out of order. Guy didn't cut off his finger with a hedge clipper, whatever it was.
miss the Mets.
I do. I miss them. I miss the silliness. I miss the craziness. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. I want to get to the Soccer World Cup as it's getting started when we come back to wrap up the hour on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue with Wake Up Call on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. World Cup next week. Glenn Davis is going to join us later on this morning. Voice of the Houston Dynamo, host of Soccer Matters. We're getting ready for World Cup next week. Monday, looking forward to that one. Monday, the United States taking on Wales.
Yep.
Excited.
It should be a good event. We got to try to ignore all the controversies that surround Qatar.
Yeah,
for
I guess.
Hosting this thing, and you know now it's time to once that first whistle blows, let's just concentrate on soccer.
See, but you just gave the perfect definition of sports washing.
Yeah, well, I know.
I'm
cutting Qatar a break, right?
Somebody in Qatar is like listening into this going, we've done them. Now let's figure everybody else out. We've solved that problem.
Well, actually, that was just
They're
one
just going to concentrate on the soccer.
listen, we got the one guy on the show. Right. We haven't gotten the other guy yet.
No, I'm with you though. I'm with you, right? I've said this many times. I'm as hypocritical with it, with sports washing. When we did this with Live Golf, I was as hypocritical as with it as ever. I do a Formula One podcast, and Qatar was a race last year. There was Saudi Arabia the last 2 years, and I did my podcast on the racing. Except this year, there was a period in the podcast where I had to talk about missiles that were launched and landed miles away from the track, where the drivers and the teams were like, can we still do this, or should we be on the next plane out of here? And there was a rumor that the Saudi Arabian government would not allow the planes to leave the air. That was a big rumor. It ended up not being true, but there was a lot of speculation at the time that it could have been true, right? So yeah, but that's how sports washing works. They go, yeah, I know, slave labor, lots of deaths, a lot of Nepal citizens died building these things, and we put them in squalor conditions. But you'll only care about the soccer when it starts, right? And we go, yep, exactly. Don't you worry about it. We'll only focus on the matches. But you're right. I mean, if you're a broadcaster covering the World Cup, you're delivering product to your audience. Does the audience want all that stuff attached to why and how a team won or lost? Probably not. And that's what you're delivering. There's going to be a lot of scrutiny on this, I think, afterwards. I think you're right. I think
there's been a little bit before.
Right.
You know, I've tried to do my best to bring it up from time to time. And I think, you know, even leading up to final days, I mean, I'm starting to see more and more videos of the hotel rooms that, you know, Qatar has put together in these fan villages.
Is there just not enough hotels there?
I thought that was their main thing.
I did too.
My God. I thought it was like, hey, I know the whole idea behind Cutter, what they were doing is like, hey, we're going to run out of oil someday. Oil's not going to be our main thing, and we're going to start losing money. These sheiks like their money. So they said, you know, we're going to start sinking money into all this touristy stuff. That's why they're building islands and having indoor ski arenas and things like that. I guess apparently they don't have enough hotels.
Well, I think you're right. I think there's going to be – well, there'll be a few people. There'll be you won't be able to ignore the controversy of this, yeah, but I think
you won't see it on any broadcast though, because
no, they're not gonna
let
them out.
It's one central broadcast. They're not gonna. I can't imagine it being talked about.
But individual reports that can get out, they'll get out. But the reality of it is the conversation about what we just did, how we got there, that's going to come out. It's already come out about all the bribery and whatnot, right, and how that went down. But I think going forward, there's going to be a more, all right, let's make sure this never happens again. Let's figure out a way that this never happens again. And unfortunately, I just know human nature. It is going to happen again. That's just the way we are. That's the way we're built. There's going to be whoever starts taking this process over in the decades and decades and decades to come, to the idea that money is not going to infiltrate any decision making is foolish. We've been fighting that battle as a human species forever and ever and ever, and we will fight it forever and ever and ever. But I am looking forward to the start of this. I love the unity of our country together and for one thing. It's great.